This is the Pet Podcast on Pets.ca, episode number 39, Health Problems in Large Dogs, for May 23rd, 2008. Hey there, pet lovers, how's it going? And welcome to the 39th Pet Podcast on Pets.ca. I'm Marco, and as always, we're coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And today is May 23rd, 2008. For today's show, we're back with Dr. Lee, and last podcast, we did a podcast on health problems in small dogs, so it only makes sense to do a podcast this week on health problems in larger dogs. Before we get into it, as always, I'd like to thank many people for their comments. In particular, James left a comment for our last podcast where he found the information very useful. He did not know about some of the problems that small dogs face in terms of their health problems, and he found our podcast quite informative. So thanks so much. As always, we love comments, so you can send them directly by email, pets.ca@gmail.com. You can, of course, just go to the blog, and that might be preferable, just to post a comment over there, pets.ca/blog. And of course, you can just make your way to the forums, make your way to the podcasting forums, and leave some information, criticism, comments, critiques, it's all good. Speaking of the forum, if people are listening to the podcast but they haven't joined our forum, of course it's free. Just make your way to pets.ca, just click on the bulletin board link from almost any page. You can join for nothing and really join in many simultaneous conversations. We have such good members. They're so kind-hearted, they're so generous, and they really answer so many important questions that people do ask. So of course we do invite you to come and participate. In terms of getting this podcast, the best way is, of course, to subscribe, perhaps via iTunes. Just click the subscribe via iTunes button on the front page of the blog, and every time we put one out, you will get it automatically when you load up your iTunes. But enough about how to subscribe to our podcasts. Let's just get right into our current podcast, an interview with Dr. Lee, Health Problems in Large Dogs, coming up now. So I'd like to welcome back Dr. Lee to our show. Last time we spoke with Dr. Lee, we talked about the health problems related to small dogs, and it only makes good sense that now we talk about the health problems related to larger dogs. So before we start, welcome back, Dr. Lee.
Hey, it's always great to be here.
And it's always a pleasure to have you. So let's get right into it right away. When we talk about larger dogs, let's just set like a weight right off the bat. We're talking about dogs that weigh more than what pounds, Dr. Lee?
Probably about 50 pounds. 50
okay. So these include, a whole slew of breeds, probably German Shepherds, St. Bernards, and then like giant breeds like Irish Wolfhounds and Doberman Pinschers. Is that about right?
Yes. There's a lot of people that will put Labradors and Retrievers in that category. It depends on how medically we kind of do break them up into small, medium, large, and giant. So I guess today we're kind of talking about large and giant, and of course that excludes the little beagles who just happened to weigh 70 pounds.
Right, yeah, just by accident, I guess. Okay, well, let's focus on the larger ones then. So in terms of the number one problem that you yourself see, what would it be straight up?
Hip and elbow dysplasia, probably the top two things that we're seeing in a lot of older dogs as to what they're suffering from. So, and other arthritis-related issues.
Okay, and for those that may not know what it is but are considering a larger breed but don't know what elbow and or hip dysplasia is, can you give us a really quick definition? I know you did it last time, but just in case people haven't listened, if you could just define again.
Oh, you bet. Dysplasia just means poor growth. So when we say hip and elbow dysplasia, it means that those joints were not made properly. A lot of times we think about hip dysplasia, we'll commonly hear people say, oh, my 6-7-year-old dog just got diagnosed with hip dysplasia. Well, it didn't just occur. It was actually there since birth. But a lot of times it takes a while to show up.
You know, just I guess really quickly, what are the effects of these types of dysplasias and how can they be treated?
Well, when those joints are not made properly, that leads to inflammation. And that inflammation is what we call arthritis. As anytime we hear itis, generally that's going to mean inflammation. So arthritis is inflammation of the joint. As time goes by, what we will have is a progression from arthritis to osteoarthritis, or bone joint inflammation, where we now have bone involvement. As we see osteoarthritis, that is what we will see on the x-rays. Basic arthritis most of the time will not show up on an x-ray, whereas osteoarthritis will. So when we see that, we're talking about permanent severe changes in those joints, which is associated with quite a bit of pain. With both of these conditions, the problem is that if you make one hip or one elbow not so right, chances are that there's some problems on the other side too. So one of the difficulties is we see these large dogs that they come in and the owner's just complaining, well, he's not getting around as much as we used to. Don't think he's in a lot of pain. Then we go ahead and take some x-rays and we realize that this poor guy or poor girl's in quite a bit of pain. It's just that it's evenly spread out, so the dog's just kind of making do.
And that's actually like a good point. You know, sometimes we think that because, you know, dogs and or cats don't, you know, exclaim with pain as we humans do, that they're not in pain, when in reality, you know, sometimes these are survival instincts. They just make themselves quiet when they're in pain so as not to get eaten by other predators and things like that. It's part of their genetic makeup, isn't it?
Correct. There's that aspect. There's also the fact that even with people, I mean, people with migraines, they can just be lying down and they look fine as an observer, but if them, they would say they're in quite a deal of discomfort and pain. I can also take a look at my grandmother who's sitting on the couch, and to me she looks fine, but when you ask her, the arthritis in her hands is excruciating. So a lot of times, unless we're able to talk to them, which we can't do, we have to take everything into consideration to decide whether or not these pets are in pain or not.
Okay. And as always, and we've said in the past, you know, the best way to do this is obviously to bring your pet to the vet more frequently, at least, let's say, twice a year. And that way, if you're suspicious, you know, you can have your suspicions confirmed or, you know, or you're wrong, but at least you know where the truth is.
Right. And the thing to remember is that it's sometimes very hard for us vets to know as well. A lot of our pain lectures are us trying to talk and decide about how to recognize our patients in pain, because it's difficult for us. So even the most dedicated dog lover who's been with dogs for, you know, 50 years, it's very easy to miss your dog in pain.
Again, really, please bring your pets in if you're ever suspicious, of course. In terms of moving down the list, I know that there's one other big one, and a lot of people have heard of it. They may not know about it, and that's bloat. And a lot of big dogs have trouble with bloat, and a lot of people freak out about the potential consequences of bloat. Can you go into that a little bit, Dr. Lee?
Right, and this is definitely one that is worth being a little bit freaked out about. The veterinary description of it is called GDV, and that stands for gastric dilatation and volvulus. And what that means is that gastric, of course, referring to the stomach, dilatation, it fills with air and expands. Volvulus is that it rotates. And so what occurs is that the stomach, for reasons unknown, expands with air. And with that air, it starts to rotate. As it rotates, it closes off the entrance and exit to the stomach and continues to fill with air. The stomach will get so large that it will press against the aorta and stop blood flow to everything below the stomach, and then stop the patient from being able to even breathe properly. The difficulty with this disease is that when it happens suddenly. It's one of the most common causes for large breed dogs to be found acutely dead. People will go to work and their dog will be fine, come home, and the dog will have passed. The other problem is that even when it's recognized, the difficulty is once it were decompressed, all that blood from the stomach down, so half of this dog's blood flow, has been stagnant and not been moving. Blood is meant to continue to move in a constant pumping action. If that blood's not in motion, that blood is actually designed to think that there's a problem. That's why when you get a cut, you start to clot immediately. There's a number of things in that cause that, but one of the triggers will be stagnation of that blood. So one of the difficulties is when that blood just sits and pools and we release that pressure and start circulation again, there's been a lot of biochemical changes inside of that blood that make it extremely dangerous for this pet. And so this is a, again, 4-star alarm emergency. Need to get them to the vet ASAP for decompression usually surgery, and even post-surgery, because of these biochemical changes that have occurred, the patient can actually acutely die up to 5 days post a successful surgery.
Wow, it's such a serious condition. Are there telltale signs when this is happening? I mean, obviously we just can't be with our pets at all times, like you say. Sometimes this can happen while we're at work, and obviously that's a terrible, terrible tragedy. Let's say we're at home with our pets, and what are the telltale signs if we're home and we're watching this happen?
Signs of GDV will be expansion of the abdomen, and it will be very obvious. It'll be very dramatic, and when you press upon the abdomen, I mean, it is truly, as they say, tight as a drum.
Because it's filled with air.
Because it's filled with air and expanded far more than it's ever meant to be. Now, because this happens, typically they're also throwing up. They're trying to expel that gas, but they're unable to do so. It'll be associated with difficulty breathing. The stomach's located just behind the liver, which is just behind the diaphragm. So when it expands out, they're unable to move their diaphragm, so they're taking very shallow breaths. There'll be no question that your dog's in trouble. One of the things that when we take a look at what can we do about it, because this will happen, when this occurs, it can happen just over minutes for this to start to occur. I think for these, especially these giant breeds, any type of GI upset, any type of chronic or recurrent vomiting, we need to try to get an answer of or some management of this as fast as possible. Because a lot of times GDV is considered to be secondary to other problems. So a dog that's having, you know, a chronic stomach upset, constantly throwing up, that may be a predisposing factor to bloat.
And I know there is some differing evidence on bloat as well, whether, you know, large meals, short meals, meals with water. In your experience, is there a relation between, you know, food and eating and how fast you eat and exercise? What's your take on that as of this point in time? I know these things are changing.
Yeah, they are changing. They go up and down. The one thing that we can say that has been in popular culture for a long time is elevated food feeding. That has been something we've been trying for a long time. We now don't think that that helps, and so it is not recommended for elevated food feeding.
What does that mean exactly, having your food on some type of raised surface as opposed to the floor?
Right. What they were thinking was that when the food was on the ground, they were swallowing more air, and it was harder to get up into the stomach. So what they were doing was recommending, and they have a lot of sales where they have, like in pet stores, you'll see these raised food tables. So they're tiny little tables for the dogs to eat, so their head is more raised natural position. Reason this has gone out of favor is for two reasons. One, the testing doesn't support that it helps. Studies are very difficult with bloat and a little bit subjective, but the studies don't seem to show that there's any benefit. The other thing is that in the wild, these dogs are not putting their food up on little tables.
Right.
So we think that genetically, they're probably more relaxed down at a lower position. We do know that large meals, eating very fast, and exercise right after, those are, just like for us, those are not good things. Those can cause stomach irritation. So trying smaller meals, slower feeding, and then no exercise for 45 minutes after eating is recommended.
And that's obviously that's good advice. No one wants to experience this. Are there certain breeds that are just known for this as opposed to others, or is it a mixture of large, you know, breeds with deep chests, things like that? Is there one breed that you yourself find, in your experience, the risks are higher?
Well, definitely we hear about it in Danes a lot. Any of the giant breeds are going to be the ones that are susceptible to it. With that said, I did have a Chihuahua mix that did have bloat, so there are truly any dog can have this happen. But in general, we're really looking at our giant breeds, Danes, Shepherds, Akitas. We're seeing a lot in those.
Good to know. And I guess it's another reason why, and I've said this many times in podcasts, posting on our bulletin, that it's so crucial to have the number of a 24-hour vet handy. It should be stuck right on your phone, you know, because these things can happen anytime. And if your vet is outside of business hours or it's a weekend or a holiday, you need to have someone you can call because, like you said, these pets unfortunately can die within hours if left untreated.
Right. This is definitely one that if you're not sure, it's good to take them to the vet anyway.
Right. And because the effects are so drastic and so terrible, is there anything preventatively that we can do for this?
There is a surgery that can help prevent this. It is a surgery that is done after treatment of GDV. Once the stomach has turned, like once the patient has had this, not only is decompression necessary, but some type of surgical tacking of the stomach to either the abdominal wall or to one of the ribs is done because those ligaments, when the stomach twists, those ligaments do not go back to normal. So once a dog has bloated, they're at high risk for re-bloating again. Many people will actually have this surgery done before anything happens, and sometimes done at the time of spay, where they can actually get the stomach tacked onto the abdominal wall or the ribs. It doesn't prevent it 100%, but it does very, very well. And it's one of those procedures. It is a big deal. So some clients do it, some don't. I would say that in general, the clients that know the lineage, and if they have like a Dane that has siblings or parents that have had this problem, those are typically the clients that are definitely pursuing this surgery. But there are some people that will do it with any of their large breed dogs.
And again, just so it's clear, it's basically stapling or fastening the stomach to other surfaces so that it's less likely to rotate. I don't know if it's stapling.
There's a strip. The stomach is made of multiple layers, but one of the layers is a muscle layer. And so a strip is made, and then that strip is attached to either the rib or stomach. There's a few different methods depending on which the veterinarian is most comfortable with. What this does is it provides, normally your organs and your stomach just kind of loosely sit where they're supposed to be, and there's some ligaments that hold it in place. What this does is it actually adheres the stomach to the body wall to prevent turning. The turning is what makes the bloat become so very bad, is that there's no way of decompressing. And some of these dogs, if you get them to where they have gotten the gastric dilatation but have not actually twisted, have not progressed to the volvulus, you can, under light sedation, just pass a tube down the mouth and have complete decompression. So there's a lot of advantages to keeping that stomach unable to fully turn.
And thus, a lot of advantages to bringing your pet to the vet as soon as you think this is possible, before the stomach actually turns.
Right. You want it before the stomach turns and before we stop that blood flow. Once we stop the blood flow below the stomach, that becomes a very, very dangerous and critical situation.
Excellent. Good information. And last question on the topic. Does this surgery have a particular name if people want to check it out with their veterinarians?
You know, there's a lot of different terms for this, and I hear a lot of different lay terms for it. If you talk to your vet about surgery to prevent bloat, that probably would be the most straightforward. Because sometimes when you talk about one procedure, it may, again, there's several different methods to achieve this, and it depends on what your vet, which one he or she is comfortable doing. So if you just talk about bloat preventive surgery,
then that's a good start, obviously.
That's a good start.
So thanks so much for that information, Dr. Lee. I know it's going to, it may possibly make a few people concerned, but it's also going to, you know, reassure people of the things that they need to do when they're talking about large dogs or thinking about getting large dogs. And again, you know, having numbers handy and or knowing the condition of your dog and potential risks are obviously, you know, good to know going in so that, you know, we can avoid, you know, terrible tragedies or even medium tragedies. So thanks so much for your time, Dr. Lee. As always, we appreciate it. And we should be speaking to you in another couple of weeks again.
It's always a pleasure.
Thanks so much, Dr. Lee. And thanks as always to Dr. Lee for doing that great podcast with us. Really, really, really informative. you know, we've often heard about bloat in particular, but it's such an important problem, especially when you have a large dog that really, thanks so much again to Dr. Lee for, you know, bringing it to the forefront of our attention again. Dr. Lee is a fantastic vet, and he practices out of Mesa, Arizona and Phoenix, Arizona, and his direct website is aachospitals.com. Link, of course, to go in the show notes. And he comes highly recommended. I've said this in the past. He's a great primary vet if you're looking for one, and he would be amazing as a secondary vet if you need a secondary opinion, of course. Dr. Lee's also been really, really active on our forums as well, just helping people out. He's, you know, he helps in the rescue world as well. He's just this great vet, and I can't say enough about him. So thank you, Dr. Lee. Our next podcast is going to be coming up in around a week or so from now, week to 10 days. And again, it should be another interview with Dr. Lee. And this time, I think we may well chat about early spays and neuters. It's an intriguing topic because vets now, some vets anyway, are neutering dogs and cats as early as weeks as opposed to months. So it should be a really interesting podcast. So I do encourage you to listen. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. It's so appreciated. As always, you know, spend an extra few minutes with your pet, your cats, your dogs, your gerbils, your snakes. You know, they all appreciate our interaction and our love, and they're only here for a short amount of time, as we well know. So, as always, please give your pets a seriously good squeeze, a seriously good hug, and an extra scratchy under the chin from Marco. Bye for now.